Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00068. Recorded on February 21, 2024. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Megatexa Grande, Part 1. Chapter 68.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
No digital applause, please. I am not worthy. I am not worthy at all. I am your humble servant, Maverick 88, and you are tuned into Post Harlan Monologics. A hearty welcome to one and all from DFW section of Texas, USA. It is the third week of February 2024, and I've been a little hesitant to make my official announcement, but it appears that the winter in Texas has come to an end. We are into the transitional season now, otherwise known as springtime, right? Springtime. Now, official calendar spring don't happen for exactly a month from now. But this is Texas. Sometimes we get spring upwards of Valentine's Day. In fact, we had it upwards of Valentine's Day. But I just wanted to hold on. Usually what I do is I hold out until I see daffodils bloom. I've got a little confusion going on here. See, at work, I've got this little scraggly row of daffodils that have probably been sitting there for 30 years, and they sit there and eat up all the exhaust from all the commercial vehicles related to the business I'm involved in, right? They look haggard, and year to year, I don't know if they're going to bloom at all, you know? Sometimes it seems like they just don't bother. Sometimes it seems like they're half dead. When they do bloom, they look all kinds of jankily and weird and kind of miscolored and... that being said, we got neighbors across the street, not the lesbian neighbors, but the one next to them, little catty corner, diagonally over there, next to the in-laws, right? And they got a row of daffodils that have been shining bright for the past, like, 5 days. I didn't notice it, and then one day I walked out there, like, holy shit. Problem is, they look so good, they look like they were just freshly planted, and I don't know. I don't know what happens in my neighborhood when I'm at work here, right? So it's like, well, these daffodils at work, they ain't bloomed, but the ones there in the neighborhood have. And I'm just kind of going by feel. We had a cold front go through Saturday, right? And I'll talk about Saturday a little bit. So Saturday was down like in the 40s and 50s, but that's as cold as it got with a cold front in February, right? And then it heated up right away the next day. And it's been, now we're into like the 70s, mid 70s. You know, it's a little sweet spot because we're out ahead of the actual springtime thunderstorms and tornadoes and hail and all that shit that comes along. So we're getting some decent weather without all the battering and fear. So that's where we're at. So, you know, this is the third week of February. We're into an early spring, which I got to be honest with you, I kind of sort of predicted, because we got a really early frigid snap come along, right? And in my reckoning here in Texas, when something comes early like that, that means the season ends early also. And there's nothing scientific about that. Just observation, and it's happened probably 3 or 4 times in the past 6 or 7 years, fairly accurately. So anyway, the third week of December, and this is a short work week, right? We got a 4-day work week because we all had Monday off for, is this really a holiday? President's Day, right? President's Day. What the most useless, worthless, non-celebrated holiday on the calendar, right? The federal holiday, President's Day. I don't know everything there is to know about President's Day, but I got a little background in it, like just my life experience. Once upon a time, back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and I think into the 90s, I forget when the cutover happened, but it used to be 2 different holidays, right? We used to get 2 3-day weekends in the month of February, one for George Washington's birthday and the other one for Abraham Lincoln's birthday, right? The first one, George Washington, he was a president. And the second one, Abraham Lincoln, guess what? He was a president. So we celebrated each of these two individuals on their merit on 2 separate occasions in the same month, February, right? And life looked a whole lot different when you went into the winter and you had 2 3-day weekends. That's cool, right? That's cool. Now you got the one. And see, what they did was, instead of having the 2, they consolidated them into 1. They erased George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and just made it a broad stroke, all presidents' holiday. And that is such a mishmash of bullshit, because half the presidents really sucked ass, right? You don't celebrate that. You don't revere that. You don't even want to remember that, except for the dire lessons that history has to teach. Case in point, Woodrow Wilson, for example, who I was just reading on a little bit, right? But I know some of the back history with that guy. This is the guy who sold this country out to the central banks, which the first 100 years of the country's existence, 125, 130 years of this country's existence, we were embroiled in a battle to keep out of here. And this country started to grow in wealth and prominence right up to the point where this asshole came in and sold the country out, because he was completely owned over a salacious affair he was having. And there's a lot to the story, and you can almost feel for the guy and pity the guy. You know, he's cheating on his wife, but his wife had some serious issues, depression issues, as a result of losing their child. And the wife actually granted this guy permission to go ahead and have this affair with somebody else. Somebody else was a divorced woman, which was a no-no 100 years ago. It was culturally taboo, especially at that elite level of American society. And everything was just wrong with it. And, you know, the scumbags crept out of the darkness. You know, the ones with the horns and the tails and the pitchfork and the fangs. And they slither like snakes. And they corrupted the guy, knowing the dirty details of his life. You know, and it's a known story. The Federal Reserve banking system came into fruition as a result of that situation, right? One example of a shitty president. We are living in an example of a shitty president, possibly shittier still than even Woodrow Wilson was, right? Woodrow Wilson got shittier than that. He became the World War I president and all that, you know, brought us into that completely beholden to our mortal enemy, Great Britain, right? All of a sudden, we become buddies with these after the central banks take over. You've got to see, you've got to understand what the hell was going on there. Oh, I did not mean to go off on this tangent, but President's Day, look, that guy sucked and he ruined it. His ruination affects us all even to this day, more than 100 years later. And then we've had the likes of Jimmy Carter. We've got this Joe Biden. Hey, George Bush, not long, somewhere between the two of them. Both of them can kiss my ass. But George W. Bush, what the hell was that even? All that was a puppet and a name, for his father and Dick Cheney. Nice name, Dick Chains, right? These are the Zionist war hawks that are part of the whole sellout of the country. They're in with the banking elite of the world. They are globalist scumbags. Ooh, I'm on a rant here. I shouldn't read a little bit of anything, maybe except besides scripture, before I go into a monologue. But this went way off tangent here, and I'm going to have to reel this crap in. It used to be, like I said, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, two separate days, two very particular personalities that were celebrated, and with good reason. One of them was the poster boy of the Revolutionary War. The other one was the poster boy of the Civil War. And both of those wars were, those were times that began to define us, Americans, the USA, as a common culture, right? We're clearly a very multicultural society. There's a lot of subcultures here in the United States. But where we all come together, perhaps it's on the highways, right? These shared places, parks, things like that. There is a singular, quote unquote, American something or another about us. And what that something or another is, the definition of that begins with what happened with the Revolutionary War, what happened with the Civil War, right? We started to gain our commonality as a unique and individual culture, society, right? So when we celebrated Washington's birthday and Lincoln's birthday back in the day, this is what we were really looking at deep down. Because I remember being in elementary school, George Washington's birthday, you had all these cardboard cutouts of Washington's head, and they had them posted all over the school, and they put flags up, and everything was so patriotic. And the same thing for Lincoln. The same thing was done for Lincoln. And you would discuss why there was this holiday, what this was all about. And you would learn things about the Revolutionary War. You would learn things about the Civil War, right? It wasn't celebrated like maybe, like you don't get the family together for a big dinner, like Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter or any of that, right? It's none of that. But there still was something to it. And it was about our culture and bringing us all together as one people in our shared place, right? There was something good about it. Now it's just nothing. It's presidents. You can't say good because the presidents have sucked, like I was talking about. It's a neutered day. You got the balls of the president. You think of somebody like George Washington, who went to war against all odds, who got this country up and off the ground against all odds, right? The big nuggets that it took to do that. And then you just cut them off with the transsexual likes of Joe Biden and his administration, right? You got the one and you got the other, and somewhere in between is nothing, inert, bullshit, air. And you don't celebrate that nothingness. There's nothing to celebrate. There's no celebration. It's a day off, right? It's a day off from work. And thank God we get one of them, where we used to get two. At least we get one. We'll probably lose this eventually also. Who knows? So I had a day off, right? So I had a day off from work. And the way I spent it was basically twofold, right? Twofold. One thing I accomplished was I sharpened three of my everyday carry EDC knives, right? I got three Boker Automat Kalashnikov AK knives. Two of them are the large ones, and the third one's a medium-sized one, the smaller one. I have three of them. I sharpened two. I have two of the large ones. I got a brand new large one backup that I don't use. I haven't used yet. That's just on reserve. That's my preferred everyday knife. It's a 4.75-inch blade. It's a small Bowie pocket knife, right? It's similar to the Buck 110, but it's kind of bigger. Well, it's not kind of, it's bigger, right? It's a taller from the knife edge to the spine knife. It's longer in length, right? 4.75, I think. what the hell was the buck 110? 3.75? It's like a whole inch longer than that. It's probably a good half inch, 3/4 inch taller than that. It's going to be a little bit thicker, probably. The steel's not as good, but it's adequate. It's either OS 8 or D2. I forget exactly what it is. Sharpens up nice, and it will hold that new sharpened edge for months and months for the work that I do with it on a daily basis, right? Sometimes I go to the smaller one. The big one has a tendency to eat holes in my back pocket, sitting on it all the time, just the way it sticks out. It's a large pocket knife. So if I get a hole in the pocket going, I'll switch to the small one for that particular pair of jeans. Capisce? There's your Italian for the day, right? There's your Italian for the day. So I sharpened three knives. Large size Boker Kalashnikov, a medium size Boker Kalashnikov. These are automatic switchblade knives, by the way. Button bush, right? And I love them because they're $50-$60. They're inexpensive, and they're really good. They're really good. And then the third one was my Kershaw Knockout, right? Which you can't get anymore. Well, at least the exact color configuration I have, right? And if for some reason I don't use the other two, that's the third one that I go to. And then the rest of my knives are kind of expensive after that, right? Actually, this Kershaw Knockout has become expensive. When I got it, it was like an $85 knife. Now it's a $125 knife, you know? And again, the color I have it in, if you can find it. But yeah, it's gone way up for whatever reason. I mean, obviously the inflation, but that's more than just inflation there. I think there's a demand that happened with it. Very nice knife. That has good steel. SVN 35 or 30, or whatever the hell that shit's called, right? So that's what I accomplished. And to me, that's a big accomplishment. My life is so much better when all my knives are sharp, right? They all kind of got dull at the same time. And now they're all sharp again. And man, what a difference it makes. The rest of the day, I had two doctor appointments, right? I went to the dentist for the first time in 9 years or so, 9 or 10 years. Not counting this awful moment that I had about 5 years ago where I went to the, maybe 6 years ago, I went to a dentist here that I wasn't familiar with, and it was just really weird and creepy, and I'll talk about that some other time. That's not the point right now. I went to the dentist, and I went to the eye doctor, right? And the dentist is what the dentist is. This was my old dentist when I used to live in Wiley, Texas. I got back with him because my wife's insurance, they accept my wife's insurance. They wouldn't accept all the different ones I tried through the years through my own job. And so there we go. We switched me up, and now I can go there. That happens to be my wife's dentist also, even from before we met. And that is what it is. That is what it always is. You go there. That's like a, it's a really bad association to make. But going to the dentist and having your mouth looked at is very similar to going to a proctologist and having your asshole looked at, right? Not that the asshole and the mouth are the same thing, but you start poking around in there, you're bound to find a problem, right? You're bound to find something. In fact, with the colonoscopy, we were talking about this, a couple guys at work last week one day, just joking around. You know, the colonoscopy, they do it for free, right? If you got the medical profession offering free shit to you, you know that that's shady. You know something's up. And what that is an invitation to make up all kinds of stuff. I mean, you're going to run a camera up somebody's ass, and you're going to find polyps, which are probably completely normal in everybody, you know. You're bound to find them, and all they have to do is designate them as potentially precancerous or worrisome or whatever. And then it's up to you to decide, you know. The insurance company will cover it. It's up to you to decide whether you want to have it done or not, right? They're always going to find something, is my point. That's a dirty place. It's shit, constantly just moving through you right there. And sometimes it just sits there and sticks around for a while. You know, constipation, that's called. You're going to find a problem. You're going to find a problem. That's the way I look at it. Because if it wasn't so, they wouldn't do it for free. You know, you hit 50 years old. I'm 56, right? You hit 50. They always, you got to get your colon checked. You got to get your colon checked. You know, my grandmother, I think, on my mother's side, eventually died of colon cancer. Like at 85 years old, right? I'll take that. I'll take that and not have you messing around my butthole. Thank you very much, you know. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. So yeah, I say all that because the dentist is the same way. They're bound. If they start taking X-rays or looking into the tooth, they're going to find cavities. They're going to find, at my age, there's always going to be something. And every time I go, it's the same thing. They give you the same line. You know, they're going to go call the insurance company. They'll let them know all their findings, see what the insurance is willing to cover for the year. And then you go on this plan for the year of tackling every problem one by one. I have but a problem with my teeth, and that's I've always had it since I was a kid. I get tartar buildup on like my front lower teeth for whatever reason. My mother, who used to work in that profession for a career, swears up and down it's because when I fall asleep, my mouth goes open, right? I breathe with an open mouth while I'm sleeping. I wasn't aware of that, but, you know, she says so. You can't really argue with it. And if that's the cause of it, that's the cause of it. I brush and floss. I brush every day. I floss most days, you know. There's a lot of days I don't eat, so why would you bother flossing, right? That's what I mean. But, you know, days I'm eating, I'm flossing multiple times a day. I get that shit. I can't stand things between my teeth, right? But still, I get that buildup, and I need to get a good cleaning that I can't do at home. I try, you know. That's what I'm going for. Clean that shit out. Give me a fresh start, right? But they find all this other stuff, and it's inevitable. You know they are. You can pretty much predict what they're going to say going in. I have no pain in my teeth. I have no problem with my teeth. I just want to get them clean on the bottom there, right? The rest of them aren't dirty or, what do they call it, tartared up. I'm going to use a tartar toothpaste. That don't do shit, right? Don't do nothing. I just have to, like, clamp my head shut so I don't breathe through my mouth anymore, I guess. So, yeah, so I'm going to get this kind of rundown of what the insurance company's willing to cover for the whole year. And then they're going to ask me what I want to do. And I'm going to say, clean my damn teeth, please. You know, and that's that. No extractions, no crown. Maybe a crown. I'm thinking maybe on the crown, possibly. They're telling me I got a cracked tooth and shit like that. And all right, that might be problematic. They want to pull two wisdom teeth that have been in my head forever and ain't done, cause no problems, right? They're like multiple. I got a broken tooth that ain't no problem. They want to pull that out and just leave raw meat there. I mean, it's kind of good when it has a little piece of tooth there, you know? It's probably protecting my gum from getting, but whatever. They'll make it, whatever. Whatever. Dentist this, you know? That's why I'm going to get my teeth cleaned and maybe one crown. I promise you, that's as far as I go with this shit, because I don't want to be at the dentist every month. Forget about that. Went to the eye doctor, which I haven't been to in probably definitely even longer than it's been since I've been to the dentist. My eyes have changed a lot since the last time. It's got to be 12 years since I went to an eye doctor. So my eyes have gotten crazy, aging. I used to be like mildly nearsighted. Now I got... there's a word for it, but it's a combination, nearsighted, farsighted. You know, I'm that old guy now that's, you know, I'm trying to read a book or something on a page, and I have to move in and out with my hand, what I'm holding, try to find that sweet spot out there where I could focus in a little bit, right? That's without glasses, and I'm good. I get by like that. It's nothing imperative. I'm just thinking long term and possibly long distance, right? If I want to start reaching out and touching somebody with our nice new sniper rifle, I may need to have a little bit better vision, you know, down the line, if you want to know the truth of it. So I went to this eye doctor again, my wife's eye doctor, and she recommended it to me. Sent me up to an optometrist in Murphy, Texas, right? Murphy, Texas, which is... if it ain't all Collin County, it's mostly Collin County. It might be a chunk of Dallas County in one corner. I'm not really sure about that. It's just down the road from where I work. It's just down the road from where I live. It's a place to pass through. In fact, it's right down the street from South Fork Ranch, right? It's literally on the same road that the South Fork Ranch is. It's just on the other end. And what's it? A mile down the road, maybe, from the South Fork Ranch. You've heard me talk about the South Fork Ranch before. It comes up frequently. Right? It comes up frequently. Just because it's just an internationally known place. You know, South Fork Ranch was the famous Dallas TV show, a quote-unquote Dallas TV show, right? It was called quote-unquote Dallas from the late 70s and on through the 80s. It went for quite a while. I don't know, was it 12, 13 years, something like that? And for a good part of that run, it was like the most popular show on TV, mostly early on, its first couple of seasons, right? So yeah, the Dallas TV show. The Dallas TV show, in its original season, perhaps first couple of seasons, was filmed on location at the South Fork Ranch. It's a real place, and it's technically, I believe it's Parker, Texas, not Murphy, right? Murphy, up Murphy Road, out of Murphy, heading north, becomes Parker, and the name of the road changes to something else. I forget. I ride up there on my motorcycle when I'm riding almost every time I go out. But the TV show was famous primarily, right? The principal character. There was an actress named Victoria Principal, but the principal actor in the show was a character called J.R. Ewing, and that was played by an actor named Larry Hagman. J.R. Ewing, of course, he was the character behind the, I guess you call it a slogan, "Who Shot JR?" Right? It was the cliffhanger craze, like, I don't know, 1979, 1980, after whatever season that was ended, right? Or at the end of the season, J.R. Ewing got shot, and they left it open whether he lived or not, and who actually did it, right? So Who Shot JR was like this big craze around that time. I believe I was in the sixth grade, which would put it at probably 1979, I'm thinking. Is that right? 78, 79? 79, probably. Larry Hagman portrayed this character, J.R. Ewing. J.R. was the driver of the family wealth. He was like the oldest son of the guy who started this this petroleum empire, and they had their offices in Dallas. They lived up there in Parker, and it was basically a nighttime soap opera revolving around this Ewing family, who were just stupid, filthy rich, right? So it was like an image of old school Texas wealth, you know, the new rich of Texas, but it's the old school version of it now. Many acres. If you ever saw the opening credits of the show, they have like helicopter shots looking over the spread of the ranch. You know, they've sold off portions of it. It's still big, but it used to be ginormous, right? Still there. Larry Hagman was actually famous, you know, internationally famous as an actor for his portrayal in the 60s sitcom called I Dream of Jeannie. He was one of those, how do you even call it? Like the 60s, the mid-60s, it had this, you know, burst of fascination with the spiritual and surreal and monstrous, right? You had the Addams Family and the Munsters, you had Bewitched, and then I Dream of Jeannie was a genie in a bottle, right? And there was probably My Favorite Martian, all this kind of stuff. They had kind of like, how do you say it? Non-human characters in the mix, right? So anyway, yeah, so Larry Hagman was famous for that. See, Larry Hagman, he was actually a Texan in his real life, apart from acting, although he'd been in his childhood kind of run around. He comes from Fort Worth originally. He was the son of a fairly prominent attorney. He grew up in Weatherford, Texas, right? I mentioned Weatherford frequently. In a couple weeks, I'll mention it again because I found out there's a flea market out there, and I also want to take my wife out to a cafe that direction, south of Weatherford, so we're going to probably do a doubleheader that day with both of those things. But he grew up in Weatherford. I think he graduated from high school in Weatherford, but yeah, between the time he was born in Fort Worth and he graduated high school in Weatherford, he was sent off to boarding schools around the country, like even as far away as Vermont, if I remember right. And he had kind of a distressed upbringing, you know. There was a little bit of wealth, you know, like a prominent attorney for her father. But I think the parents divorced. His mother was an actress, and then she got pulled away from home to do her work, and he ended up in New York City with her, some shit like that. And he was bouncing around, right? Bouncing around a lot in his youth. And rather than becoming an attorney like his father, he chose to be an actor in the same vein that his mother was. And, of course, he became internationally famous as a result of it. So I guess good choice for him. That's a very basic biography of the guy. I mean, you got to know him later on in life when he was ultra uber famous as J.R. Ewing, and it started to become a pretty apparent that he was a rambunctious person and he liked to drink, and he walked big and he talked big, braggadocious, and usually half in the bag almost all the time, right? That's the reputation. And a lot of that you can glean by, if you go on the tour to South Fork Ranch, right? They have tours of the place, and it's all about the TV show. And I did it once. I've mentioned it before in some episode that still had F-bombs in it, right? We're not doing F-bombs anymore, so I could retell some stories without the F-bombs, and they'll probably be a little bit more engaging, right, than they used to be. But my mother came out some years ago, and we took her, my wife and I took her on the tour over there. I never really saw much of the show, you know. I got the basic gist of it, but I was a kid when they were playing nighttime soap operas. Why would I care, right? And as I got old enough to care, I was either on drugs or trying to get off of them, and it was never a thing. I would like to watch it now. At least like two or three seasons up front when they did a lot of location stuff locally here. I got to figure out exactly where to watch it. I don't know that there's a place to watch it. We'll see. If anybody of you happen to know, chime in. Chime in. So, yeah, I was curious. You know, like I spoke about Meatloaf, right? Meatloaf, previous episode, actually two episodes. And, you know, he was born in Dallas. He's a Texan. And it turned out, you know, he was one of those rare conservative entertainers, right? They're few and far between in this reality that we live in, the way things are. And I was wondering if maybe if this Larry Hagman happened to be one of those also, being born in Texas, coming out of Fort Worth. Fort Worth is like the conservative city in DFW, way more so than Dallas. But back then, Dallas was too. The whole area was back then. So it was at least a 50-50 shot, you know? And now, it turns out that he was pretty much a liberal, right? And, okay, that's what you would really expect, ultimately, out of an actor, an entertainer, from Texas or not. But he was outspoken, and I don't mind this at all. I mean, he was getting on in years. He had a liver transplant and all this, and it worked, and he lived for some years more. In the presidential administration, right, I mentioned President's Day and how worthless and useless of a holiday that is, because you had enough presidents that really sucked ass to denigrate the whole idea of the United States presidency, right? The Oval Office, the executive office, who gives a shit, right? I mean, it's been corrupted. You know it, I know it. It is now as much or more than it ever was, probably more so. But anyway, during the George W. Bush administration, I believe I already railed on this guy in this episode and several previous ones, you know. I'm no fan of his. I'm conservative. You know that if you listen to me at all, right? I'm a conservative person, but that doesn't mean that the Republican Party carries my interests in mind, right? excuse me. Ooh, that was dry throat right there. Give me one second. I was never a fan of the Bushes. I read about them long ago. You know, late 80s, early 90s, and you know, I discovered that their family was a long-standing member of the federal banking cartel that I honestly can't stand. I've already been on about that here today, right here, right now, right? And with that, closely tied into the whole neocon slash rhino thing. You know what that is? Neocon, short for neoconservative. That is a political movement when a bunch of Jews basically abandoned ship in the Democrat Party. Not really abandoned ship, pretended to. Infiltrated the Republican Party. Drum up the whole notion of Christian Zionism amongst the Christian conservatives, right? The right wingers. And basically corrupted that party, right? Now, why it stands on conservative principles like, you know, the family, the nuclear family, a stand for life against abortion and things like that, a stand for the gun rights of the citizenship, right, the Second Amendment. That's all fluff. That's all flavor. Democrats are opposite of that. Republicans, as conservatives, stand for that. But then you get the international, the global fiscal policy, and it's all about what? The military and strategic defense and aggression of Israel, right? It's all about bending over for Israel and taking it right up the ass. And that's what a Bush Republican is. And I never voted for that shit. Right? I never voted for that shit. That's the whole idea of the fiat currency, the Federal Reserve, the inflation, the big interest rates, stupid high mathematics, you know, like the value of the dollar is so low that you need trillions to be a millionaire anymore, that sort of thing. But also the military-industrial complex, high defense spending, and that need for perpetual war. Just to justify it all, right? Like I grew up never really wanting to be, never able to be patriotic about a country that was always going out into the world and starting shit with other people. You know, we're a wealthy company, or a wealthy country, and we ought to be able to kick ass financially, just simply in the trade and tariffs, right? Build a strong defense, nobody screws with us, and let our freedom to innovate guide our course, guide our destiny, right? Of course, walking hand in hand with Christ, hopefully. You can't impose that on people, but you would hope in the goodness of everything that people would come along to come around to the Lord. So, you know, in the same vein that I was anti-Bush, you know, I was not a Bush Republican. I was conservative otherwise. And I didn't care for that whole military, and I don't. It's not like I changed from that. I still don't. The military-industrial complex, right? To me, a Democrat and a Rhino is the same thing because their ultimate ambition is the same. It's just a matter of flavor, you know, a matter of flavor when it comes to certain conservative ideas. And they get bantied about. They go back and forth. They change. You had Roe versus Wade for so many years. Now they've taken that away. They'll try to implement it as time goes by. You know, it's an ebb and flow. It's a trade-off. You know, you get one for the other, and nothing really changes. And it's all a whole bunch of bullshit. It's a dog and pony show, right? And so why do I say all this, right? I'm kind of like picking up on my old time, like teenage hippie anti-war sentiment, right? And that anti-war sentiment is something that's always been with me. I'm a fighting kind of person, right? And I'm a gun guy and all that. I'm pro-military, but it's how it's used, how it's allocated that matters to me. I don't want to be an aggressor. I don't want to be a bully asshole in the world. I don't want to be a part of that. I never did, right? I don't support that shit. And Larry Hagman was outspoken about George W. Bush pushing us into the endless war, you know, the war on terrorism that really was undefined and based on absolute bullshit anyway, right? The weapons of mass destruction and all that shit. I was against that. I wasn't only against that. I was against his father's Gulf War, right? Desert Storm. I was against that one too. At a time when everybody seemed to be favoring it, right? I remember our local newspaper up in Somerset County, New Jersey, in the town where I grew up, was called the Courier News, a Gannett newspaper, right? And they had some kind of, I don't know if it was a contest or something, but they wanted poetry submissions related to the war, when the Gulf War started, right? It only lasted a month or so. It was a very patriotic time in the country for some reason. So I submitted something that was completely anti-war. And when they printed the paper, they didn't even include mine. Everything was absolutely patriotic, which is complete reversal of what it would be like today, right? Complete reversal of what it would be like today. But anyway, so Larry Hagman made his stand against George W. Bush, right? Again, the Bushes were sort of, I call them pseudo-Texan. They're really Connecticut Yankees, New York bankers, and, you know, one Bush came out to Texas to get involved with the oil industry and, you know, central intelligence work and shit like that. He was involved, 99% positive he was involved with the assassination of John F. Kennedy, right? And really, that's like the great big middle finger to the citizens of America as a whole, saying that their power is more powerful than your power. Your country is our country. They're pirates, skull and bones, right? They're skull and crossbones. That they're literally pirates. That's what they call themselves. Think about it. George W. Bush served two terms. His first race was against the Democrat candidate Al Gore. That's a presidential election that went down in massive infamy, with the hanging chads on the ballots and all this bullshit, right? The next time, his second campaign for election was against John Kerry. You know John Kerry, that ghoul, that Frankenstein-looking world economic piece of shit, right? He's the Democrat counterpart to George W. Bush, the Republican counterpart. And don't you know, in their background, they share a legacy of being members of that secret society at Yale University called the Skull and Crossbones. Small world, isn't it? Bunch of assholes. But they're not the top of the heap. They're American elite, but they're not global elite. There's people above them, right? And that's what I was talking about before. The neocons. The rhinos I didn't get into, but it's the extension, really. It's what rhino means is Republican in name only. They're not really Republicans. They may be conservative in their heart of hearts, maybe. But what they are power-hungry scumbags, power brokers, power mongers, whatever you want to call them. They're all into personal power. That's what their lives center around. And they don't give a shit for ordinary workaday Joes like you and me, right? They're looking to squeeze every nickel out of the Statue of Liberty, come what may. They don't give a shit, you know? And they sell out to the highest bidder. They are literally a bunch of sellouts, a bunch of pirates, a bunch of scumbags. I am really negative on this stuff today, ain't I? Wow. Wow. So anyway, I mentioned before, right? I mentioned before about the South Fork Ranch. South Fork Ranch, like I said, they have tours. They have a gun show, right? I mentioned that before. A story where I bought a counterfeit cold steel AD-10. $150 knife I got for $55. Turned out to be a counterfeit. So I ended up getting a deal through, I think it was Midway USA. I talked about all this stuff before, right? I got the real thing, the genuine article, at a discounted price for some reason. They were like, for 2 days, they were doing some kind of thing. I was able to get it for $100, so I basically broke even and got myself not only a cold steel AD-10 knife, but also a beater counterfeit of it. And it, you know what, it seemed okay. The counterfeit seemed okay until you started using it, and it almost like falling apart in your hands, you know? There really is no comparison between the two. Anyway, right? Anyway, on top of anyway. So they have a gun show there. They have tours there. They actually have horseback riding and lessons there, which I should inquire about. They do banquets and weddings there. They had a flea market, right? It changed in time. It was very short-lived. It ended. I've spoken about it. It was like a second Monday trade days. Then they changed it to a third Monday trade days. And all this was in conjunction with the flea market up in McKinney, Texas, right? Which is further north. It's into the center of Collin County. It's actually the county seat of Collin County, McKinney, Texas, right? You know, I mentioned all this stuff before. And like I said even before, right? This is the F-bomb free version of these same old stories, right? And apparently, like I said, the South Fork Ranch Third Monday Trade Days is no more. It's gone. It ended. And apparently I maybe must have F-bombed South Fork Trade Days into oblivion, right? It's all my fault. You know, my wife and I were actually fans of the whole idea, and we would go up there every other month or so, just to be a part of it, to help it develop and grow, and it never really took. For whatever reason, it just never really took. Now, its association with the flea market up in McKinney, which had been there forever, like 100 years, it's like really old, right, that flea market up there, and I used to go to it. I used to live in McKinney. I'll get into all this stuff, right? But that flea market, something must have happened in the family of the owner of the grounds and that flea market as a business. I don't know, but perhaps somebody passed away. There was an inheritance left to the kids. The kids were uncertain about how they wanted to handle things. One of them wanted to keep the flea market. The other one wanted to sell the land off to developers. They shut it down. Right, it was done, and that's when the South Fork flea market was born, because apparently somebody wanted to continue the flea market. They couldn't continue it there on that land, so they tried to move it down into Parker, Texas, and they did that for so long. It might have lasted 9 months, maybe not even that long. I'm not really sure. I remember it being kind of cold, and I remember it being very hot, so it had to be a few months. But what I do know is the McKinney Flea Market had closed down, but it only stayed closed down for 3 months, and I never heard that it opened back up. But it had opened back up. I don't know how long it's been open for, but it's open. It goes again. So this weekend was third Monday of the month, and the way that works here in Texas is you find your third Monday on the calendar, and then the immediately previous weekend, right? So the Sunday, the Saturday, and even the Friday right before that third Monday are the dates of your monthly flea market at that given location, right? So we're glad. We'll drive out for a flea market, for a decent flea market. And it just seemed like, having that South Fork one really close, it's like a 12-15 minute drive. Even closer from my job. Not that I'd come here from the job, but you know, it's close proximity to the core of my being, right? Geographically speaking, McKinney's not so far off, but it's an extra probably 20 minutes north of that to get to. And not too bad. But what we had been doing instead is going way out to Canton, which is an hour and a half to 2 hours, and it's not bad and it's huge, but it's very. Now, I gotta say, it's been like, is corporatized the right word? It's the same thing. People are like in a business. It's like they have a brick and mortar business somewhere, like a store selling perfume or something. And then they fill up a trailer full of some of their shit and they go down to the flea market. It's such a huge flea market and they just set up like another store right there. And the things that they're selling, I mean, there's nothing like people went out and found this stuff. You're not finding like all this old used stuff, these the trash and treasure type of things, which anybody would tell you that's what a flea market was always about, right? It was always about somebody's garbage having some value to somebody else. And the fun of it was going through it all and looking for the things that jump out at you. And then you haggle for a price and then you walk out of it, right? Even if you don't have anything, you're searching, you're looking, and that's part of the inherent pleasure of it, right? The treasure hunt factor. So McKinney, Texas, right? I'll tell you a little bit about that. My story, McKinney, Texas is where I landed when I first came to Texas. It's the first place that I lived, right? And it was different back then. It was different. It was kind of isolated, right? The counties around here, for all you northerners and easterners, are huge. You know, some of the counties are bigger than states. I could tell you that maybe New Jersey is the size of like 2.5 counties here in North Texas. They're just big and they're square, right? For the most part, they're just huge. And plunked down out in the middle of it of Collin County is McKinney. Plunked down in the middle of Dallas County, just to the south, is Dallas. The spread of Dallas, right? The urban sprawl coming out of Dallas, heading north, right? It's on fire right now, right? But when I got here in 2007, I got to McKinney. McKinney was out on an island. By that I mean is all the subdevelopments weren't contiguous. You know, they were up to Plano, and then there was ranch land from like the northern half of Plano all the way up to 380 in McKinney, and there was just the beginnings of some subdevelopments, but they were kind of older in style. They were like from the 80s, early 90s, right? And then after that, there was nothing. Like, I could go to the edge of the neighborhood that I was living in, and you could just see all the way to the horizon, not a damn thing. It was just all plains, all prairie, just grassland all the way out. You know, there was great sunsets, you know, great huge sunsets you would get out there. And it ain't the same no more. It's all built up. And it's all built up with the McMansions, which means that they're two stories tall, ginormous big roof, so every building stands high. So you lose that big sky effect, right? Because so much of the horizon is eaten up by these monstrous houses. They look like a million Darth Vader helmets, you know? I don't know, it's silly, but I got here by way of Nashville, Tennessee, as the story goes, where I was staying with a friend of mine when I was in a troubled time in my life, right? I was kind of bottomed out, and I was trying to get my shit back together. It was a spiritual conundrum that I was in. In fact, I came to faith while I was there in Tennessee, and that'll always be a very important place and part of my life and person, right? The person, my friend out there, right? Always somebody very important to me as a result of just that time and the way things were. But it was time for me to move on. Where I wanted to move on to was Texas, and I ended up meeting, well, a couple of people online, a couple of people who invited me to come on out. And I had one in Houston area, one in the Dallas area, and I chose to go to the Dallas area. And it wasn't really a matter of Dallas versus Houston. It was a matter of which of these people, and they were both women, right? Which of these women was least crazy, who had the least amount of red flags. That's what it boiled down to, right? So I went on basically what was a blind date, a 10-hour drive from Nashville to McKinney, Texas, a place I never heard of, to meet this person, right? Then we met. There was, McKinney was developing. There was in the developmental stage. So everything that was along the main highway that goes through McKinney, which is US 75, they call it the Central Expressway out of Dallas. It kind of runs north-northeast out of Dallas on that tangent. It's actually northeast out of it. And then you got the Dallas Tollway that goes due north along Preston, right? Along Preston Road. So this is the spoke that goes out northeast. And along that, you had developments. That's how Texas, that's how the urban sprawl spreads. It goes along the freeways. And then it starts to work inland away from the freeways from there. Up at 75, all these towns had little core towns, like their old town, like their town square. You know, Plano, Allen, and then McKinney, right, going up that way in order. Once you get into Collin County, right, out of Dallas County. So along those lines, you started to have, you know, the stores pop up, the Walmarts, the Targets, the Home Depots, all the big box stores. And it starts filling in with all the service industry stuff, sporting goods and restaurants and whatever. You know what I'm saying, right? So you kind of had that out there to support the local economy, which was growing. Subdevelopments were happening, but it wasn't all filled in 2007. Now it's all filled in, right? Now it's all filled in. You know, you can see it kind of unfold. 380 is the crossroad, the main crossroad. So Texas 380 highway goes east and west right through McKinney between Greenville. It goes, you know, but out of Greenville, out to Denton, right? It's that far north. It's on that tier. It's the just second county down from the Red River, cutting right through the heart of it, right, 380. And where I was living was a neighborhood on that west end. So it was part of the new part of McKinney developing. And it was out as far as down 380 west, as far as where the big Raytheon plant is, right? Raytheon, you ever hear Raytheon? That is part of the notorious military industrial complex that I loathe so much, right? In my ancient hippie heart, believe it or not, right? That's a, I don't like the war thing. I don't like the war thing, right? But coincidentally, there I was, living in a development right across from the big Raytheon plant. And as you go further out there, right, it was wide open at that time. Now it's starting to fill in. It's not necessarily subdevelopments right up on the highway, but it is all commerce, all these strip malls, right, and restaurants and all the stuff, you know, box stores, everything I was talking about that happened up and down 75, now is happening down 380 West, you know, heading out towards Denton. And then somewhere along the way there, you come up to this old flea market place, right? Which is a good flea market place. It's been there forever. It's meant to be a flea market. You know, it's kind of got like a gully running through the middle of it. It's kind of got a couple of hills, different scenes. You know, you come around the bend, it looks different than the other. It's not just like most of Texas where it just lays flat and everything, you know. It actually reminds me of the flea market that I grew up with up in Jersey. It was down the street from my grandparents and aunts and uncles' house and my cousins in Warren, right? They had the flea market, what was it, every Saturday, Sunday, in Warren behind the fire department up there, right, in Jersey. Very similar layout, a very similar feel to that, which is kind of weird for Texas, right? It's a great place for a flea market. Back in the day, it was pretty big. Right now, it's trying to come back to itself, right? Everything got disturbed by that, I guess, family scenario that I was just trying to describe to you earlier. But anyway, it's there. It's there. Go to it, third Monday, right? But when you get out that way now, everything is filled in. And you turn off any street, now you're getting into, and I mean, you could go north, you could go south. Either way you go, you start getting into the heart, right, of the post-Arlen McMansion country. That's what I call it, right? In DFW, there is no more notorious McMansion country than this south central sector of Collin County, maybe even the southwest to south central sector of Collin County. You're in a land there, right? Now it's north of 380. The western side of McKinney, north of 380, all the way down to like what I call 190, what everybody else calls the George Bush the freeway, right? Again, George Bush, right? What a bastard. You know, his father's dead, but the son lives down in that neighborhood down there, right? Off of Preston. Oh, boy, that word keeps coming up, too. Well, hey, this is Dallas, right? This is the lay of the land. I'm talking about when you get into, like, the northern half of Plano, really all of Plano, but the northern half particularly, right? All Plano is a suburb. The northern half of it, newer suburb, and that extends all the way up through. It's like this conjoining of these different towns that happen in the center of Collin County, where Plano meets Allen, meets Frisco, meets McKinney, right? They all come together, and it's expanded even north of there into Prosper, Texas. Go figure, right? And this is a place where you drive through it. It's not like you have a McMansion neighborhood here and then a moderate, like, middle-income family neighborhood there, and then a lower-income family here. See, Plano is more like that. It's kind of more dotted because it's got older subdevelopment in it. Wiley is like that, right? It's kind of dotted. It's got moments of McMansions. West side of McKinney, west side of Allen, all of Frisco, and the northern part of Plano, right? All they call it West Plano, I guess. They all come together, and this whole area is just nothing but these McMansions. I mean, it's pretty, and it'll get prettier when the trees start to grow out more, you know, because it's all relatively new. It's done very well as far as suburbs go, but it's a whole different way of life. I mean, when I say McMansion, these places are like 4 or 5 star hotels for like a 4 or 5 member family, right? Husband, wife, 2, 3 kids, 2.5 kids, you know, something like that. And they live in these monstrous houses that are 5,000, 7,000 square foot. And most of the square footage is open air. It's not like it's a very well-crafted and practical use of space. You've got 15-foot ceilings and cathedral entryways, and it's opulent. It's opulent. It's disturbingly opulent, right? I'm just not that kind of guy.
This monologue is continued in the next episode, Chapter 00069, Mega Texa Grande, Part 2.
Thank you for tuning into Post Allen Monologics. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post Allen Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at postallen.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@postallen.com.